a shower.
Sir, yes, sir.
By a soldier, a shower.
Sir, yes, sir.
This Veterans Day, do something great for our troops. When you make a donation to our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign, we'll send soaps, lotions, and other specially made bath and body treats to our brave men and women overseas. Show our troops some love and buy them a shower. And don't forget, the holidays are just around the corner, too. Soldiers love care packages.
4 more years!
BubbleGenius.com.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
America, I believe we can build on the progress we've made and continue to fight for new jobs and new opportunity and new security for the middle class. I believe we can keep the promise of our founding. The idea that if you're willing to work hard, it doesn't matter who you are or where you come from or what you look like or where you love. It doesn't matter whether you're black or white or Hispanic or Asian or Native American or young or old or rich or poor, able, disabled, gay or straight. You can make it here in America if you're willing to try. I believe we can seize this future together because we are not as divided as our politics suggests. We're not as cynical as the pundits believe. We are greater than the sum of our individual ambitions, and we remain more than a collection of red states and blue states. We are, and forever will be, the United States of America. And together, with your help and God's grace, we will continue our journey forward and remind the world just why it is that we live in the greatest nation on earth. Thank you, America. God bless you. God bless these United States.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
You can read about it tomorrow, or possibly see it tonight. But with radio, you get it now and get it right.
Here we go!
Their target is 64. They're at 59 with basically the early vote counted. It's gonna continue to edge up. Big swatches of Butler County, Delaware County, and Warren County, all of which are Republican counties that have big chunks of their vote out.
Is this just math that you do as a Republican to make yourself feel better, or is this real?
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Thursday, November the 8th, 2012, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez. We're brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius. Bubble Genius. Before we dive into our full election recap on the show today, I have a bit of breaking news. I guess this is only appropriately breaking news for us on this show.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's not groundbreaking news. I mean, it's not.
Well, you set it up like it was going to be something huge.
Yeah. Well, it is huge insofar as it's going to make you laugh.
You are finally transitioning over to becoming a woman, and you will now be known as Lana Wachowski Bob Seska.
You know, it's also news that makes me smile.
That's good. And
I don't know if I should be smiling, but it does. It makes me smile.
Okay.
So, just before we started the show, I'm scrambling to get together all of the various things that we play at the top of the show. But I get a Twitter note from one of my Twitter followers, basically telling me that I made Dean Chambers cry.
Are you serious?
Dean Chambers, the unskewed polls guy.
Yeah, the meatloaf of polling.
That's right. Dean Chambers wrote a piece, a follow-up piece in the National or in the Examiner on Examiner.com. You know, he wrote his famous piece, I don't know, it was a week or two ago, in which he called Nate Silver an effete, you know, skinny wizard or whatever.
Basically, yeah, as Gawker said brilliantly, you know, he may as well have just slapped the kids math book out of his hand and said, "Nice numbers, fag."
Right.
Yeah, that's how Gawker, put it.
Well, so Dean Chambers wrote a second piece for Examiner.com. I haven't read the entire thing, but it's basically like a mea culpa in terms of why he was so nasty towards Nate Silver.
Oh, really? Because I did read, I don't know whether you can say to his credit or not, but I did read immediately after when he said that he was wrong and Nate Silver was right.
Yeah. Well, he wrote, and that was in an interview. He did an interview right after the election in which he sort of admitted to being totally, totally wrong.
But right,
here's what he wrote about Nate Silver. This was a couple of weeks ago. He said, "Nate Silver is a man of very small stature, a thin and effeminate man with a soft-sounding voice that sounds almost like he's the new Mr. Castrati voice used by Rush Limbaugh on his program." Blah, blah, blah. He goes on and on and on. So he kind of explains why he said that by saying, "Those comments were wrong on my part to write and publish them. And I again apologize to Nate Silver and anyone who was offended by them. I've never written about anyone in the past and included comments like that addressing their physical appearance or making ad hominem attacks because I don't believe in it and have been targeted by comments like that from others. I should have known better and followed my usual practice to abstain from making comments like that. But on this one occasion, I failed to restrain myself from doing so, and I regret publishing those comments above. While I make absolutely no excuses for my inappropriate comments in that article," read that, he's about to make an excuse for his inappropriate comments, "I will mention this, which was my motivation for writing them. Again, I make no excuses whatsoever," even though he's just about to. "I want that to be clear. I only mention this to provide context. In this article about me and the unskewedpolls.com website, on some website called the Daily Banter," whatever that is, "I was described this way by the author of the article, Bob Seska, writing about me and judging me only by only one picture of me he saw, because I've never personally met Mr. Seska." Quote, and here's what I wrote on the Daily Banter. Quote, "Unskewed founder Dean Chambers is the bizarro Nate Silver. Whereas Silver is a mathematical and statistical savant who's a half-man, half-slide rule chimera, a skinny New Yorker who's devised astonishingly accurate forecasting models for both sports and politics, and who exhaustively explains his work on a daily basis aboard his 538 blog for the New York Times. And then there's Chambers, a portly southern amateur who thinks he's uncovered a widespread polling scam when, in fact, he's merely stripped out any and all accuracy or calculated mythology and just, you know, made stuff up to confirm his political bias, boost his internet traffic, and win the adulation of terrified, flailing conservatives scrambling for electoral life preservers as the Romney-Ryan campaign ship rapidly takes on water." And he said, then Chambers goes on and says, "I mention those comments simply to provide context and note what would even tempt me to make the inappropriate comments about Nate Silver." So basically,
you called him portly, which he is.
I called him portly, and
he is
portly.
The only physical comment you made.
And it was a matter of contrasting Dean Chambers with Nate Silver. I called Nate Silver skinny. In fact, I called Nate Silver a half-man, half-slide rule chimera.
You didn't say anything about you didn't cast any aspersions on Dean Chambers' sexuality,
no,
which is obviously what he intended.
So if you're wondering,
I mean, there's a part of me, you know, somehow there always is that small part of me that feels bad for these people when they get pissy.
Yeah.
But it just, no, you know what? The way you described him is pretty much on the money. And, you know, and I kind of ripped him apart, too. When and again, Gawker destroyed him. Gawker just annihilated him. Gawker said you know, I cribbed this line and credited Gawker in the piece that I wrote about him for Daily Banter, where I said Gawker said that his system of coming up with numbers is the same basically as a kid who turns an F into an A by drawing an extra line down the right side of it, which is exactly, you know, and I think they also said, you know, he basically just decided to indiscriminately change numbers to ones that didn't make him sad.
Yeah.
So you know, it's he's a farce. You know, he may be a really nice guy. I don't know, but he's a farce and deserves to be beat up on for the ridiculousness the ridiculousness of the sort of sham that he tried to perpetrate.
Well, he's obviously a little sensitive about the fact that he's portly. And you know, I mean, I don't normally point those things out.
Oh, I do. I love it. Oh, dude, one of my favorite things, really quick, one of my favorite things here, you know, Taibbi gets so much crap for constantly picking on the way people look. And I will do it too. I'll do it just kind of like the way you did. You know, you throw it in there as sort of a to draw a picture, both physical, mental, and all that other crap of what a person is like.
Yeah. And well, he's the opposite of Nate Silver, is the point I was getting at. If you're familiar with Bizarro Superman and the Superman comics, I was creating a sort of an imagery, a compare and contrast. You know, you have Nate Silver, who's a skinny, very smart guy who does statistics, and he crunches numbers, and he's come up with this algorithm. And then there's this other guy who's exactly the opposite in every way of Nate Silver.
No, he is. And again, you hit that on the head. I mean, he genuinely is. My attitude when it comes to the unskewed polling thing, and I even said so in the piece that I wrote for Banter, you know, questioning the sampling of polls that we're supposed to take as gospel, there's nothing at all wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Nothing. You know, this nothing should really be taken as gospel unless you've got 100% hardcore math. There is nothing wrong with questioning sampling. But to essentially pull numbers out of your ass.
Yeah.
Because, well, these just make me happier.
Yeah.
You know, to basically pull them out and go, you know, put them down and say, there, that's better. That looks more like what I want.
Yeah.
That's just ridiculous. That doesn't even deserve to be given the time of day.
Well, and to that end, all of the more accurate polling showed Democrats with a +6 a party identification. And that's how it turned out to be.
Yeah.
There was 6% more Democrats than Republicans voting in the election. So the sampling was exactly right. And what Dean Chambers was trying to do with his – I can't even believe we're talking about stupid, unskewed polls. It's the most ridiculous thing in the world. We're going to get to that epistemic bubble coming up in a little bit on the show. But what he did was he stripped out that party identification and rebalanced it based on from what I believe, he either made it even Steven – or he used some previous election metric, something from 2004 or 2000 or something.
Right. What he did is, speaking of the epistemic bubble, he's probably somebody, and I don't know him, but he's probably somebody who has lived under the Fox News tent and, you know, lived inside that hermetically sealed echo chamber and sort of came to believe, well, look, you know what, I'm seeing the enthusiasm. I'm seeing, you know, I'm being told he can't lose. I'm, you know, that every Republican in the known universe is going to come out and vote for this guy. So therefore, there's just no way this can be possible. And that's exactly where his numbers truly come from. That's where the math comes from. The math comes from, and I know, you know, everybody's been talking about this. The math comes from his gut, and it's nonsense.
This is like attacking Iraq because of bin Laden in Saudi Arabia orchestrating 9/11. It's not certainly not that extreme, but you know what I'm getting at. So he goes after Nate Silver because I attacked Dean Chambers. It's just such a weird way to retaliate against Nate Silver for something that I said. And there's lots of stupid pictures of me on the internet. You can attack me if you want. I don't care.
You know, the only thing weird about you is that you're very tall. That's come on.
Yeah, I am very tall. I'm extraordinarily tall. But it's a funny thing to me. It's hilarious that he took it so personally that he felt the need to go off on sort of a homophobic, even though I'm not aware of Nate Silver being gay or not. But it's this weird homophobic rant against Nate Silver.
I heard one, and I can't remember where it was. I heard one, not that this matters, but I heard one, some outlet somewhere call him openly gay. And I don't know whether that's true or not, and which makes me feel bad to even sort of repeat it because, you know, first of all, his sexuality shouldn't matter. Secondly, I can't for the life of me, I can't remember where I heard it.
Well, let's get into the election a little bit. I imagine we're going to spend both shows talking about the election results and all the different things about it. I think that, you know, speaking of Nate Silver and the wizards and nerds who called the election accurately, I think this is going to go down in history as being the Moneyball election. They really, really targeted this targeted voters in a precise and almost laser-like way, where, from what I understand, Plouffe and Messina basically went through the census data and targeted all of the districts specifically where they won in 2008, and then looked at the differences in the demographics between 2008 and 2012, and essentially orchestrated their entire campaign around targeting those specific districts. I mean, if you're aware of the Moneyball story, you know, they went after players who maybe weren't big names, but who could give them wins without spending a lot of money. Mm-hmm. This is a new kind of campaigning, I think. This is, I think 2008, 2004, we were talking a lot about engaging in a 50-state strategy where the campaign would go in and try to win everything from ocean to ocean. But now I think this was a different kind of situation where they, early on, I think Messina and Plouffe went to the president and said, we've got this plan to tackle these districts with laser-like precision, and that's how we're going to approach it. And then you add on top of that the extraordinarily precise projections that were put together by Sam Wang and Nate Silver and all these guys who just did. I mean, they basically did. There was no mystery about how they predicted the election correctly. They just added up the polls and said, well, here's an average. Here's what's going to happen. Here's the odds of, you know, the president winning or Romney winning, and put it out there. It was no mystery. There was no wizardry about it. It wasn't done. And we're going to, I think on the after party, we're going to play a clip from last night's Rachel Maddow show where she kind of made this point. Nate Silver wasn't making these numbers up to make Republicans feel bad and Democrats feel good. It was just empirical math. Sometimes in 2010, didn't look so good for us, right?
Mm.
You know, he wasn't good. The conservative movement is so engaged in projection, they feel as if because they play around with a lot of BS and go after a lot of hypothetical constructs, basically make up stuff and then attack it, they think that we're doing that too. They think that right. Nate Silver is doing that.
But they've always thought that. Yeah. I mean, you're reversing it. Fox News exists because of their distrust of the liberal media. And because they've got that bubble now, they don't want to listen to anything else. That's and they right. refuse to. They have this completely ingrained distrust of anything but their own people.
We're going to take
and their own people lied to them, lied their asses off.
We're going to take a break and get into the Fox News meltdown and how that relates to smashing up against the epistemic bubble wall right after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Yeah, we're back on the show for this week, our election recap, wrap-up, roundup, whatever you want to call it. So Fox News Channel, I think, represented, the coverage on that network really represented, we played a clip at the top of the show, of really the high watermark of the Fox News meltdown from Tuesday night, which...
That was, the way I described it, that was honestly the damnedest thing I've seen in a very long time. It was fascinating. It was like a social experiment. It's like watching one, like a sociological thing. I've never seen anything like that. I've never seen an entire news operation, and you can barely call them news, the wheels come off so dramatically, the whole place to deflate so quickly and just go completely off their rockers. And it's just... It was a sight to behold.
Yeah, Andrew Sullivan referred to it as the sound of an atom splitting.
Hmm.
And I thought that was pretty funny. And it really was. I mean, it was, well, there were a couple of layers to it. It was one, the anchors on the air smacking up against the, like a brick wall, like suddenly learning. It was like Jon Stewart did a thing with the Truman Show where Truman's on the boat and he runs into the side of the set and he doesn't realize what's happening. He doesn't know that that's the end of his universe where he's reached the wall. Well, it was exactly what happened on Fox News Channel. And then the guys behind the scenes at the quote-unquote decision desk were looking at reality, you know, looking at exit polling, looking at the data, looking at the votes that had yet to come in, and determining that they were 99.95% sure that of their decision to call the election for the president.
It was just shocking. It was shocking to see the disconnect between what Karl Rove is hearing and what he apparently believes, which I honestly thought, you know, he can deal in a lot of crap, but does he actually believe it? Of course, you know, the way I put it is, this is a guy who placed basically a $400 million bet.
Yeah.
And you lost it all very quickly. I mean, you can practically see the sweat beating on his forehead over the loan sharks that are going to come after him because he can't pay them back.
Yeah.
The guys are going to come to, you know, the rich guys are going to come to break his legs. But yeah, I mean, to watch him basically fight reality and then to watch Bret Baier and Megyn Kelly essentially go back and demand answers because these guys, you know, the nerds in the back have have pissed off a very, very important Republican. You know, Karl Rove is pissed, so you're going to have to answer to him.
Yeah.
Which, you know, nothing would have made me happier than to watch, you know, one of those Fox News employees say, screw you, I don't work for you.
Right.
I don't owe you anything.
And, you know, I actually nicknamed that clip that we played at the top of the show, the sound of a man crapping his pants. Because, I mean, that's entirely what I felt Karl Rove was doing. He was realizing, oh, holy hell, I've spent $300 million of very powerful men's money. And...
Yeah.
And I didn't win a damn thing. I mean, not a single election where Crossroads GPS pumped all kinds of money, whether it was the senatorial campaigns, against Tim Kaine in Virginia, the president at the national level. It all failed. I mean, it was basically like making a $300 million bet at a blackjack table.
That's it. Exactly. I kept waiting for Rodney Dangerfield to walk in and say, Moose, Rocco, help the judge find his checkbook.
Exactly. So, I mean, on two levels, it was the butting up against the edge of the epistemic bubble. And then it was Karl Rove just like crapping his big boy pants because he knew that he had really, really screwed up. And he's just desperately running the numbers. And he's, you know, there's a clip of him and he's pointing over at Bill Hemmer and like, send me more numbers. And he's got his laptop out and he's scribbling stuff down and he's rattling off returns as they come in and talking about guys refreshing the Secretary of State, the elections website. It's unbelievable. And then Megyn Kelly gets up like Michael Moore style with a camera crew and goes marching down the hallway. I think she did that. And Bret Baier may have contributed to that process just to kind of stop the madness. Cause I think even they were thinking that this is getting really embarrassing.
I think Megyn Kelly is somebody who has – I genuinely don't think that she buys into 90% of the crap that she spews. She's very – you know, she's opportunist and career-oriented, which I got no issue with. God bless her. And yeah, I mean, she really did. The funny thing is, to give her credit, she had the best line of the night, which was, you know, is this just not math that you're doing to make yourself feel better?
Yeah. Yeah. And Jon Stewart nailed that on The Daily Show last night where he was talking about how that kind of summarizes everything. It summarizes what Rachel Maddow was talking about. We'll talk about that on the after party, in fact, because it's very limited time. But it's all about the Republican campaign, whether it was Romney or on down through the down ballot races. What they were doing and the mistake they made is to attack policies that didn't exist and to attack, I mean, Clint Eastwood illustrated it brilliantly. And that's
it was perfect. Yeah. They've been attacking a figment the entire time. Andrew Sullivan said it best. He said the reason that they couldn't defend and they couldn't counter Obama is because they weren't fighting a real person.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And so the president must have been, and the entire upper echelon of the OFA campaign must have been just so giddy all along, knowing that We have checkmated them and they don't even know it. We've gone into these districts and we have targeted them. Every word that we're saying and inserting into stump speeches, everything that we're saying in ads, everywhere our super PACs are pumping money, we're we're targeting these places with precision. You know, we're not flailing around here. We're not playing, you know, from a rule book of even 4 years ago. We're recreating this. Meanwhile, they're over there. They're attacking empty chairs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They had to have known that they were way, way, way ahead of the ball game. I mean, just looking at the polling, they had to have known that, you know what? That first debate was kind of an F up. Yeah, we kind of effed it. But you know what? We're still ahead. Even the numbers that Nate Silver was coming up after that first debate, the president was always favored to win. It narrowed significantly to the point of making many of us crap our pants, speaking of pants crapping. But he was always ahead. And so I think they were able to use that precision to recover from that first debate and basically just run circles. So you talk about I thought about something from the Civil War, which I tend to do. No. Some people make baseball analogies. I tend to go back to the Civil War. There was a Confederate cavalry commander named Jeb Stuart. And Jeb Stuart, just for fun, and because his cavalry corps was so renowned and so honed in terms of how to exactly engage in these campaigns, he would just, for fun, ride circles around the Union Army. They would just do, like, take all of their men and just make a big circle around the Union Army. And they wouldn't even know it. They wouldn't even know that Jeb Stuart and his cavalry had just gone all the way around them, behind them, to the side of them, on their flank, up and down. And so they're just clue. They marched merrily along their way when, in fact, the Confederates knew exactly where the Union Army was going step by step. I got the sense that that's what the Obama campaign was kind of doing to Romney all along.
They are brilliant politicians and brilliant tacticians. I'll say that.
Well, you know, I think that brings up the next layer of all of this, which is, of course, the big postmortem in terms of, you know, the Republican Party and what are they going to do? Are they going to, you know,
I was kind of like, you know, the mailbag questions that we've done so often. I know that a couple people have asked this over time and I don't know. For a while I was kind of like, they have no choice but to face demographic reality. And then as time went on and they got crazier and crazier, even just over the past few months and you know, more of the sort of unskewing type crap came out. I'm like, no, they're not going to change. They're not going to change at all. But they admittedly, I don't know how well this will stick as a sort of soul searching lesson, but they got their asses handed to them. Yeah. They really did. And all of their worst fears, or maybe the ones they hadn't even realized or haven't been willing to confront, were right there in front of them. And it did sort of hit them over the head with reality. And that reality is they're dying. They truly are. It doesn't mean there aren't conservatives in this country. It just means that brand that they have been selling, that they've allowed the Republicans have allowed themselves to be taken over by the fringe, that brand, those people doing that, they're dying out.
Yeah, they really are. Literally. When you rely on a shrinking demographic and you've constructed your entire strategy around appealing to that demographic, it's really, really difficult to change. And there are several areas where they simply cannot change. It's just going to be impossible for change. And we're going to get into that right after a break with Bubble Genius, back after this. Show is brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. Making this here program happen for years now. Can't thank them enough. They did so much work for the campaign, too. A lot of their sales went to liberal causes. And so hats off to the ladies at Bubble Genius. Here's the latest really awesome thing that they're doing.
Soldier, a shower.
Sir, yes, sir.
Buy a soldier, a shower.
Sir, yes, sir.
This Veterans Day, do something great for our troops. When you make a donation to our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign, we'll send soaps, lotions, and other specially made bath and body treats to our brave men and women overseas. show our troops some love, and buy them a shower. And don't forget, the holidays are just around the corner, too. Soldiers love care packages. 4 more years!
BubbleGenius.com!
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Yes, and when you go to iTunes, make sure to give us a nice review. How about that? Tell all your friends to subscribe to the show. It's absolutely free. By the way, speaking of bargains, if you go to Bubble Genius, you get 15% off your entire order because you listen to this show. Just enter your promo code Bob and Chez, BOBANDCHEZ, upon checkout, and you get 15% off everything you buy at BubbleGenius.com. So the problem with the Republicans changing is the things that they need to change most are also the things upon which they've built their entire platform and their entire voting base.
They have.
I mean, what do we have? What do they have to change the most? Well, they need to change their approach towards women. Yeah. They actually need to treat women with, you know, as if they deserve human rights. And it's going to be very, very difficult for them to do that because they've got this abortion thing. And in pursuit of banning all abortions, they're trying to pass a personhood amendment. They're not going to stop trying to push a personhood amendment. And this personhood amendment mandates that all abortions become illegal, including abortions in the cases of rape. Because basically, if you say, well, a fetus is a human, killing that human, regardless of the circumstances, it would be ostensibly against the law. And so then you add the rape dimension into it, you get all of these crackpots trying to justify rape. And that was one of the big, big F-ups from this, you know, this last year plus.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to even beyond that, going back to Paul Ryan and Todd Akin co-sponsoring legislation, forcible rape and all of that. So
right.
the abortion issue, that's, you know, that's a non-starter. They're not going to soften on abortion. They're not going to soften on it. You know, there might be some things that occur. Like I remember 2004, there was, there was a lot of talk about, quote, so condescending, but the postmortem after the 2004 election was that George W. Bush won with, quote unquote, security moms.
So, yeah, every election there's a new term.
Yeah, but security moms and soccer moms and, you know, that was a thing for a while. But
NASCAR dads, that was my favorite.
NASCAR dads. But when you become the party of transvaginal ultrasounds, and that becomes written into the record, it's hard to erase that. You can't walk away from something like that, or maybe you can, but it's going to be really, really difficult because, again, the base. If you want to talk about the one thing that unifies the Republican base, it is, excuse me for being so frank, but it is dead fetuses. The mental image of aborted fetuses is what is the cohesive factor behind why there are so many very, very radical Republicans. And they can't see beyond that. They can't see the greater consequences around restricting a woman's basic human rights and control
over
her.
It's because they believe that it's murder, and they believe that, I mean, like you said, to not be that would be to change who they are fundamentally.
Yes.
You know, essentially what you're saying is, you know, I always used to complain. I was complaining about Aaron Sorkin that whenever he writes a Republican or someone who's conservative, he basically writes the liberal version of what he wishes a conservative would be.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of what I think. While it makes sense that while demographically they're going to have to change, I think asking that from them or expecting it from them is the same kind of thing. Yeah. I think that what you're essentially saying is be more liberal or be more to the center. And a lot of them won't do it. And that's why one of the things that I've heard, again, you knew this was coming, is there are those within the party who are saying that, kind of like the Tea Party, they should go off and now form a third party, a third truly conservative party, which, you know, we all saw what that did for the Republicans last time.
That's right.
And continues to do them, by the way.
Well, they can. It's fine. I mean, in fact, it would probably be better for the Republicans if they did that. They would just be utterly powerless. They need the Republican Party. If anything, the opposite will happen. The more moderate Republicans will begin to break off.
Yeah.
Because if you're a moderate, if you become sort of a moderate third party, then suddenly the Democratic Party wants to work with you, and that empowers that moderate third party.
No, you're right.
You know, whereas the Tea Party, no one's going to want to work with them.
Because, you know, I read what you wrote today for Banter, and I'm not entirely against every single thing that's considered conservative politics. And because of that, yeah, you know what? I do remember a time where I may not have agreed with a lot of what's going on, but at least they were sane. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and there was compromise, because that's what politics is about. It is about compromise. You're not going to get every single thing that you want. This country's too big and too diverse. That's the problem. The problem is we now have a country where whoever is elected president, that person is president of, you know, half the people. And that's a real issue. You know, you need someone, at least in the eyes of you know, the hardliners. You know, the Republicans won't budge, the Democrats won't budge. And you need a government, whether it's a person or a person along with a group of people, you need the branches of government to be able to negotiate. They have to. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there's a vast swath of this nation that doesn't get represented. And you bring that point up when you talk about the possibility of a third party candidate running. Because, you know, I think you hit it on the head, and I agree with you, certainly agree with you on this, that America's too big and too diverse to have a president win with, say, 20% of the vote, 30% of the vote.
Yeah.
You know, it would be disastrous, because this country is so large. You would have an entire group of people disenfranchised.
That's right. You'd be governing 314 million people by only getting 30 million of them to support you.
Yeah.
It's just not. It's a horrible way to go about governing. It would basically cripple, at least governing at the executive level.
Right.
But you know, I think what the Republican reaction is going to be. They all knew that Mitt Romney was not a real severely conservative man.
No.
They knew that he was at heart a moderate, and so now what they're going to do in reaction to that is, I think the next candidate they're going to run for president is going to be of the Newt Gingrich far right. Maybe not, obviously not Newt Gingrich. I don't think they're going to nominate Newt Gingrich. But it's going to be some
white hot ball of rage. Did you see that on The Onion?
No.
I put it up on my blog on Deus Ex Malcontent. It's Onion News Network. Basically, they say that the front runner for 2016 and the Republicans has already emerged, and it's a giant white hot ball of seething rage.
It's so great. The Onion has just been absolutely brilliant these days. I want to get into the next layer of what they won't be able to change right after one last break, back after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Yeah, welcome back to the big show today.
Doing all right.
So, we're looking ahead to what the Republicans are going to do over the next 2 or 4 years to kind of reinvent themselves, which is, frankly, as far as I'm concerned, never ever going to happen. They might reinvent themselves, but it's not going to be to more moderate ends. They're absolutely going to run farther right. And here's how they're going to do. Well, I mean, let's approach it this way. The second layer, the first layer that they weren't ever going to be able to change on is abortion. And therefore, they're never going to fully capture women because of this ongoing assault on basically their human rights. The next layer of this is racial animosity. That's always going to be a component of the Republican Party. It's been the component of the Republican Party for our lifetimes, for 40 plus years, since 1968, and in a less formal way in the years before that. But the Southern strategy is built into Republican campaigning. It's just what they have to do in order to secure their white base.
Yeah, we now have a country that essentially has a Confederacy.
Yeah. Their base thinks everyone of color is a moocher who wants stuff. I mean, Bill O'Reilly said it best.
Oh, God, yeah. That was actually the moment That, besides Karl Rove, that was the moment for me that was the most sort of startling response to, yeah, to the victory.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, this is Bill O'Reilly in full-on Stormfront racist tirade mode.
Who's even winning right now, never mind who won. But how do you think it got this tight?
Because it's a changing country. The demographics are changing. It's not a traditional America anymore. And there are 50% of the voting public who want stuff. They want things. And who is going to give them things? President Obama. He knows it, and he ran on it. And whereby 20 years ago, President Obama would have been roundly defeated, mm-hmm, by an establishment candidate like Mitt Romney. The white establishment is now the minority. And the voters, many of them, feel that this economic system is stacked against them, and they want stuff. You're going to see a tremendous Hispanic vote for President Obama. Overwhelming black vote for President Obama, and women will probably break President Obama's way. People feel that they are entitled to things, and which candidate between the two is going to give them things.
Yeah, yeah, you know what? Things like human rights and dignity, yeah, and, yeah, you know, getting sick without going broke.
Yeah, I mean, that should be played over and over and over again. Because he thanks, Bill. You know, he hit it right on the head. He really, really pointed out why he's right. That's why Republicans didn't win right there, because you think that way.
And so already they're going down the token route. Okay, they're already trying to prop Marco Rubio as the solution to that problem. George Will wrote about it. Yeah. Bill O'Reilly did a talking points memo monologue about it. Marco Rubio is going to be the solution to all their problems. Why? Because he's Latino.
Right.
That's
just
it.
Cuban.
Yeah. Never mind that that he voted against the DREAM Act and refers to undocumented workers as illegals. The problem is not the color of the candidate they run. The problem is the policies and how they talk. You can't win Latinos. You can't win women. You can't win young people if you're calling them moochers, and you're voting against things like the DREAM Act. It's about the policies and the way they talk. And if they change those policies and they change the way they talk, this is the catch-22 they're in. They change all of those things. Suddenly they're losing that white base. They no longer have those people that they rely on in the South. Those angry white Christian men. Who, if it wasn't for them, there would be no Republican Party.
Yeah.
It would have been a hands-down landslide on behalf of the president. If it wasn't for all those angry white men who the Republicans just bend over backwards to appeal to, and they always, always, always have. So you put up Marco Rubio. What do you think? Latinos are effing idiots? They're not going to be able to see through that? So, well, this guy voted. We don't like this guy. He voted for the DREAM Act. He refers to us as illegals.
Well, the interesting thing is, having lived both in Los Angeles and Miami, mm-hmm, you know, and at the risk of sounding like, certainly I don't mean to be condescending. I don't want to sound like O'Reilly here, but there is a very, very big difference from a Mexican American and a Cuban American.
Yeah,
very, very big difference. And I'm not saying that the two don't like each other. I'm just saying that Cuban Americans are traditionally very conservative. Obviously, the Cuban exile community are freaking insane in Miami when it comes to Castro and anti-communism. I mean, it's frightening. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I think that he's, if they're thinking of him as a token, they're in for a very big surprise. Because I think that a lot of people are certainly, because of his beliefs and because they'll see through that, you know, they'll see through the nonsense that they're trying to do. It's I don't think it's going to work.
Well, if you rewind,
I mean, which, by the way, is not to say that Marco Rubio is not a smart guy, which he is. You know, he's a good politician.
Yeah, but he's far right. He's pro-war.
Absolutely.
He's all for the same top-down, tax-cutting, austerity-driven economic policies that Mitt Romney was for, or George W. Bush was for before him, or Ronald Reagan, or Bush Sr. And this is their mindset, and these are the things that all of these moochers that Bill O'Reilly talks about, these are all those things that we don't like. Moderates don't like that. They say it failed.
If anything, this was a referendum on that those policies. Do we continue with the Obama policies that are the opposite of those things, or do we rewind 4 years and try them again? And people said, no, we've got to keep moving forward. You know, I mean, 4 years ago, or I should say 8 years ago, John Kerry got, I don't know, 80-85% of the black vote, and he wasn't black. Fancy that. People voting for John Kerry because of his policies and because he represented something different than what the Republicans were offering up.
Right.
You know, I don't think if the Republicans suddenly decided to run Alan West for president, I don't think he's going to get 90% of the black vote. Sorry, Republicans. You can't play in tokenism. And this is where they just don't get it. They think if they just put on a facade of something, like if John Mitt Romney suddenly pretends to be severely conservative, that he's going to win by a landslide. But right. you can't fool people like that. You think you can fool some of them, certainly, but it's just artificial. It's the way they play to Democratic policies. They play to policies of the Obama administration. They just make stuff up. And then they attack it. So, and that leads to the next thing is they're really stuck on this obsolete and ineffectual economic philosophy. This is the third element that they just simply won't be able to change. They're not going to suddenly become the raise taxes on rich people regulatory party.
Right.
They can never, ever change that. When you have middle and working class poor Republicans who vote in support of that kind of economic philosophy, that's so deeply baked into the cake of the whole Republican platform and the whole Republican approach towards economic policy. It's so ingrained, and you just cannot strip that out without just suddenly, why don't they just become, I joked on Twitter, it was either the night before the election or as the election was happening. I joked that Mitt Romney suddenly announced that he was Barack Obama. You just can't. The Republicans would have to basically just become the Democrats.
Right. That's it. Exactly.
And they just that's just never going to happen. So but I mean, ultimately, I think, you know, it's all fun to kind of game all of this out and kind of be concern trolls. But I think that ultimately, at this point from where I'm sitting right now, and maybe I'm not feeling as charitable as I should, I don't care if they continue to poison themselves. I don't care if they continue to self-flagellate and just completely run themselves into obscurity. Or as Mark McKinnon said last night on MSNBC, claw their way to the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I feel a little bit differently only because I feel like they are going to, I mean, at least for the time being, they're going to continue to exist as a political party.
Sure.
And so, you know, for the time being, at least, I mean, over time, who knows? But, you know, they have to be dealt with. The people who believe this way have to be dealt with. And it would be a hell of a lot easier if they just changed a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Well, they're not going to go anywhere. You're exactly right on that. We've talked about this before. The calculation of their obstructionism the last 2 years was that, you know, we're not going to work with the president. We don't care that we can't, that we're not going to be able to boast any of the successes that might come.
I'm curious to see if that's going to change. I'm curious to see if that is the one thing that may change in all of this. That that the people who really, I mean, because Boehner, look, all Boehner's interested in is keeping his job. You know, he's a politician. He really is. Really and truly, there's no more a politician in this country.
Yeah.
You know, when I say that, I mean in the reptilian sense. You know, he wants to keep his job. And so, you know, when he had to go head to head with the Tea Party idiots, you could just see it in his face that he hated having to do it because it was jeopardizing his cushy gig. And so I'll be curious to see for all of his – he's already got a little bit of bluster going on. I'll be curious to see whether when the fiscal cliff comes up, that really does turn into – I mean, first of all the Democrats have to do is nothing. So, you know, they're definitely in the catbird seat on that.
Sure.
But it'll be interesting to see if he tries to sort of square off with them again. so close to what to basically, as Obama would say, the shellacking they just got. I want to see if he's willing to do it with this still very fresh in the public's mind.
John Boehner.
Because if he does, he's crazy.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up John Boehner, because I think John Boehner is old school Republican.
Very much. That's what I mean. Yeah. He's an old school Republican politician.
And so therefore, when the Tea Party thing happened in 2010, I think he recognized the danger in that. And he's said some things that have kind of intimated that idea, that he was kind of concerned that if the Tea Party takes over the party, we're going to have to do some things that probably are not in our best interest long term, which is precisely the idea of obstructing the president, record numbers of filibusters. And that was what ended up happening. So now they've got to work against that. They have no successes on which to hang their hats. They can't say, well, you know what, there was this historic health care reform and it's going to benefit a lot of people, including a lot of our base. We were part of that. We helped do that. Thank you.
That's it. Exactly. Yeah. It's exactly what you said. And I know you've said it before, and so have I. The idea that it used to be when there was the Tip O'Neill Reagan thing, there was the I want to latch on a little bit so that at least we get something that we want. So we can say not only, hey, look, you know what? These things that we put in there that, you know, that helps our constituency. And hey, you know what? We also opposed a lot of the other stuff. They get, you know, it's a twofer. It's, you know, it's a win-win.
And then you have the media component of the entire Republican infrastructure and the AM talk radio people, as well as Fox News Channel. Do you think that as ensconced and as much as they have their talons gripped into the skulls of every Republican leader on Capitol Hill, do you think in a million years, if those guys relent on tax hikes or any sort of new revenue, that suddenly AM radio and Fox News Channel is going to rally to their defense? Not a chance in hell. They are going to lose their spadoinkle. Their brains are going to melt out of their ears. And they will let Republicans know about it. And then what do we get out of that? What do we get out of that? And I'm certainly admittedly gaming this out. 2014, suddenly the Tea Party starts running a bunch of primary challengers. We have, and it becomes, the whole thing folds in on itself and becomes even worse for the Republicans. Anyway, so it's going to be really, really tough for them to change. I think that, it's completely anathema to who they are. The Republicans just don't change. What they keep doing is they move forward, and they might react to the opposition a little bit, but ultimately they're going to be the anti-choice party. They're going to be the party of racial animosity, this whole 47% or a bunch of moochers who want stuff party. And they're going to be the party of the rich, cutting taxes for the rich, cutting social spending for middle class people and working class people. They're going to be the austerity people. And that is just so, it's so baked in. And I just don't know. And gleefully so, I just don't know if they'll be able to change that whole approach. At least not in time for the next couple of elections.
Oh, I mean, as long as they continue to behave the way they've been, I could care less what happens. Couldn't care less. I always hate people who make that mistake. But yeah, I couldn't care less what happens to them. As long as they can, I've always said that. Like, you know, I'm relatively moderate on a lot of things, but no, you can't abide. And if you got a brain, you can't abide what the Republican Party is and what they represent these days. And as long as they continue to be that way, screw them.
So we have a big after party coming up. So you want to subscribe to the after party at $6 per month. $6 per month. And you can cancel at any time. Just go to bobsesca.com, hit the link for the Bob and Chez Show after party, and subscribe. Going to talk, talk a little bit more, obviously, election kind of stuff. I want to talk about, oh my God, this last story out of the Romney campaign. Again, goes back to this whole fictitious approach by the Republican Party. We'll get into that. It has something to do with Benghazi Gate. We're going to talk about that on the after party. Rachel Maddow did, I talked about this earlier in the show. She did a fantastic monologue, probably her best monologue ever. And we're going to play a clip of that on the after party. Plus, Chris Matthews' apology for something really Probably not something very smart. It was very, very stupid of him to say. But I really appreciated his apology. We're going to talk about that in the after party. Unhinged drunken conservative goes off. We're going to be just playing this great, great clip of this this woman from Nebraska who just went off on this hyperactive. Yeah, I don't know if you saw it, but it is classic. And, oh, God, another unhinged thing from a legitimate TV news anchor. We're going to be playing that clip. And that's all coming up on the big after party tomorrow. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. And we'll see you on the after party. Bye-bye.